throughout all of history, they've only talked about the fame, never the hard work, never the elbow grease, never the early call time.
Good morning, early call time.
Hi.
How's everybody doing today?
Cock-a-doodle-doo.
You got your morning coffee?
I got
and cocoa.
I have hot chocolate.
It's a pretty early call time. 10 a.m. means I'm waking up at 8 a.m.
Whoa.
Today we have guest Brad Durante.
Either's fine.
Yeah, it's like
Brad or
what's Brad. A pronunciation that you will not accept?
Hey, you.
Ooh,
all right. Perfect.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like my name at all when they say that.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
That's fair.
Brad is one of the current editors on Z Nation on the Sci-Fi channel. How did you get that gig, by the way? And by the way, it's not here in LA.
No, it's in Spokane, Washington. We shoot and edit everything up there.
Oh, you hide in Spokane too?
Yeah.
I'm from Washington, so I know about Spokane.
Well, I'm
or Spokompton, as some people call it.
Spokompton?
No one calls it that.
Is it a rough area?
Riverside? Spoke Riverside?
Spoke River. That's a nice city, actually.
It is. It's a great area. And, they shoot all around there, and they double it as the apocalyptic world of the Z Nation. And it's a good spot for that because there's a variety of locations.
Right.
And the job came around for me through a contact that I made 15 years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was an assistant editor that I worked with when I was a post coordinator at a small production company, and we've just always kept in touch. And this job came available. He checked in with me to see if I was available.
Mm-hmm.
And got my resume to the producers, and next thing I know, I'm in Spokane for 6 months a year.
Yeah.
So
why do they edit it there versus down here?
Because the show creator, Carl Schaefer, is there.
Okay.
So he's writing. He's overseeing the writing with the...
Oh, so the whole thing, like the writers are there too?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's produced by the Asylum for Sci-Fi.
Yeah.
And so the producers are up there. Everybody comes up.
Yeah.
And the crew. A lot of the crew is from LA or Seattle, and then there's a lot of local, majority of the people there are local in the Spokane area.
Yeah.
The Asylum. I didn't know that they made TV shows. I thought they mainly did features.
This is their first.
Oh.
That I'm aware of, and it's actually having the best critical success of most of their programs that I understand.
Well, I mean, Sharknado was received. That was them, right?
Yeah. Sharknado
was received pretty well.
Yeah, it was. It was received. And you know, the thing about those shows is they have such amazing casting on those. You see the people that they get are, you're like, really? He's in that? Or she's in that?
Right.
So that's, that carries over into our show. They've done a couple stunt castings this last season, which were kind of nice and surprising.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Gina Gershon came on, and Anthony Michael Hall was on.
Oh, nice.
So,
something to look forward to. I'm only on season one right now, so I'm way back.
Well, be ready for spoiler alerts.
Yeah. No, it's totally okay. and you guys cut on Premiere.
So. Yeah, we do.
Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah, the first season they cut on Final Cut 7, and I guess they had rendering... You know, constantly rendering in the visual effects and stuff.
It's VFX heavy.
Yeah, and so the format is such that, you know, we can carry files across between Final Cut and between Premiere and After Effects and all mm-hmm. that, and mm-hmm. it goes through pretty easily for the VFX guys. So
that was surprising because we saw Deadpool yesterday, and at the end in the credits, I saw this was edited on Premiere.
It's a great program.
It's a big thing that Premiere's, Adobe's boasting that Deadpool was cut on Premiere.
Yeah,
that's a really good program. I was surprised by it because all of my experience with Premiere had been, I'm on it, and my system crashed, and that was, that's dating back 10, 15 years of trying it in college, and mm-hmm. and then trying it at different post houses that had it on there, and I'll be like, can we just cut it on Final Cut? You don't have Avid? Come on.
Yeah.
It's surprisingly powerful when you get to it, because at my job, we were playing with it. Like, we're playing with the migration from Final Cut to Premiere. And just the subtleties in it are just like, oh wow, it's really powerful. Like the other stuff in the suite, like Media Encoder works really fast with and it deals with frame rates amazingly.
It does.
You you could work with so many different formats and frame rates in your Premiere timeline, and then when you export, Premiere will apply dropdown properly. Like it's just really robust, and all the obstacles and roadways before you can start editing are kind of peeled back a little bit in it.
Yeah, it's true. The multiple types of formats that you can have in the timeline, like you said, is I think revolutionary. I mean, I guess Avid has that now a little bit more, but not to this extreme. I was pleasantly surprised, yeah. Especially since it had a Final Cut 7 keyboard setting.
That was the most helpful in the transition.
Yeah, and somebody told me this week that you can actually download an Avid keyboard setting as well for it. So nice. if you're
very smart,
it misses some shortcuts, but you could just quickly add them in too. Yeah. There's not too many.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I had been on Premiere for 6 months, and now I'm working on a show this week on Avid, and it took me about 3 days to get my muscle memory back to those shortcuts.
That's not even that long.
No. Well, I was on Avid forever. You know, and
three days
is enough.
Yeah.
But the thing is that Premiere, like, it has a completely different language, too. Like, stuff that means one thing in Final Cut, they'll use a different word for it in Premiere, or the same with Avid. Sure. So it's like learning that new language. And
I have a question regarding that.
Yeah.
Well, you're familiar with a trim tool in Avid,
mm-hmm.
correct? You know, where you can grab the video and take the video one way this way and the music the other way and keep everything in sync. Do they have something like that in Premiere?
It doesn't work in the same way.
I haven't played with it.
Yeah, it doesn't work in the same way, so I actually didn't use it.
Okay.
I do multiple video tracks, and that's how I move my stuff around.
Oh, okay.
In that sense. In Avid, it's so much easier to sort of trim back and forth.
Right.
It's not as simple.
Okay.
It's a little more, I don't want to use the word contrived, but it's a little more of a workaround.
Yeah, because I think that was from my transition from Final Cut to Avid. I think that was the thing that really sold me was after you actually learn that trim tool, it's something clicks.
Mm-hmm.
I can't describe another clicking moment in Final Cut, but it was just everything became it was a whole new world after Trim Tool. So I was able to be faster and things like that.
Yeah,
so.
The one that I use more is the slip because it seems to work easier. It seems to be more sort of in the same vein.
Gotcha. So,
yeah, trimming it back and forth that way or slipping it back and forth that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Another thing that's like pretty great with it is like I'm working on this project right now that's dealing with two cameras that are, I think they're like Canon GX7s, like it's like vlogging cameras, and they shoot in MP4 H.264, which Final Cut doesn't do well with.
Mm-hmm.
So I started doing it with Final Cut, and that takes like, it's like an hour and a half long session. So from two cameras, it takes like two or three or 4 hours to transcode it sometimes to something that Final Cut will take, then putting it in, then doing stuff to it, then rendering, then exporting, compressing it for YouTube settings.
Yeah.
That's just like so much extra. That's like an extra like 5 or 6 hours of just sitting around waiting for the computer to be ready.
Right.
And so now I'm switching over to Premiere, and now it works natively with the footage, and I could just export straight into YouTube settings. Like it just takes out so much extra like of that prep work that you don't need to do anymore.
And that's with Premiere.
That's with Premiere. Yeah, just takes out so much extra time you don't need to do.
Oh, that's great.
It's really grown on me. I was really against it at first, but the transition, like it's, I think I'm surrendering to it.
Yeah.
I think
surrendering.
Yeah. Oh, shut Render. Up.
Huh? Sir Render.
That's actually pretty good. That's a pretty good post joke for someone who's not in post.
Yeah. I don't even know what you guys are talking about. I've been completely out of the loop since we started, pretty much.
Oh, yeah.
Huh. That can be your DJ name. Surrender.
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 Surrender. Surrender.
You too can get Adobe Premiere for $30 a month. That's what I pay.
That's what I pay.
For the whole Adobe suite.
I think you're up in. It's only $29.95.
I'm paying $50.
Really?
You're paying for it?
No, actually, the person that I'm doing these videos for is paying for it. But it's like for everything. Oh, are you guys just getting like the two-thing program?
I get everything.
That's everything.
Yeah, it's everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it like a
maybe 21 or 22 programs?
Maybe it's like a business discount or something.
Are you, but do you do the monthly or the annual?
Monthly.
Monthly. Yeah. I did get a student discount for a year, and that was $19.99 a month, I think. But yeah. Yeah. Adobe.com.
Fuck. Well, I think check we're locked into that contract for at least 12
months. It's a write-off.
We'll fix it.
That's exactly right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man.
I should redo my taxes.
Tell your tax professional.
Tax professional is named Turbo.
TurboTax?
Yeah.
Professional? Like the dog?
No, I just I found a guy named Turbo who does tax. I almost said cut taxes because that's we've been talking about editing.
Right.
Who cuts your taxes?
Yeah.
I'm gonna.
That's a personal question.
I'm gonna segue.
Check this out. Okay.
So we've talked about cutting in Premiere, cutting in Avid, cutting in Final Cut. Where did you start?
Shit.
Look at that segue.
There it is.
I started off working on Avid way back when. Mm-hmm. Took an Avid. I was a cinematography student in college and I was a cameraman, and that was going to be my life. I wanted to do that. And then I took a course where we shot something on 35mm, and then they transferred it for us. And then, so we got to shoot on the Panavision cameras, and oh, that's a real big deal. It's cool.
Yeah.
And then they transferred it for us, and then they're like, okay, now for the next 3 weeks, you're going to learn the Avid. It was like this summer arts course through the Cal State system. And after about 3 days, I was like, okay, this is it. This is what I'm doing. Because I had sat behind somebody who would work on an Avid at a production company that I had done some free work for. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, I'm here sitting on the Avid. I've got two screens working as one, which blew my mind way back when. And then it just came to me really just living there for the next 3 weeks. I was literally, it was at my college. I knew the guy that locked up the buildings. He would let me come in after hours, after everybody left. And I was in there learning it on my own to the point where about day five, I was teaching other people things, but they were funny.
Nice.
Yeah, it was cool. It reaffirmed what I was learning. And then, but the funny thing was, is they would, the class would come in at 9 and they would find me asleep on the keyboard. They would, you know, bump the first time they did it was one of my friends. He was like, hey, man,
first time.
Yeah, like, it happened twice. And that's why I'm telling this. He woke me up and the first thing I opened my eyes and I looked at him and I said, you didn't bring me coffee. The next morning he did.
Well, that was very nice of him.
Yeah, he went down and spent 55 cents at the little coffee maker and said, here you go, man, wake up, it's time for class.
Like, thanks, bud.
Yeah.
Well, I feel that if you can spend that much time in doing something and like really like working hard at it, falling asleep doing it and still want to continue to do it again the next day, mm-hmm. you found something that you like to do.
Either that, or the OCD was kicking in.
Or that,
one,
too.
One or the other.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a little
probably,
bit of
probably
that.
Probably a little
yeah.
bit of both.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I think what it was I was obsessed with learning it so that I could use it without thinking about it.
Yeah.
Because it's the struggle of, you know, when you're working on something, like, oh, shit, how do I do this? And so it behooved me to just get in there and try to learn just the quick shortcuts and just the ways that to put things. I wasn't even an editor yet. You know, it was right. Like my mindset wasn't even that. It was so much of, I just want to learn how to move things around and try things out. Let's throw some music on that and see how it works.
Right.
So we were cutting a music video. So it was, you know, anything goes really.
Yeah. And that was pre-internet. I'm assuming maybe not. I don't know.
I think the internet was out there. You know, I
hadn't caught on yet.
Well, it was a thing where like they weren't even like giving students, you know, like when you go to college now, everybody gets a student email address and all that. We didn't have that then.
Okay.
We didn't even have that yet. So it hadn't really taken over as it has.
Right.
So
yeah. So you had to make those mistakes. You had to learn from them. I mean, I taught myself how to use Avid, and you know, there's a lot of mistakes like, you know, you don't put media there, or you know, just simple things that you can't just go to the internet and search like, how do I do this now?
Right.
You know, I have no idea. I mean, I was learning pre-internet, and I now am adapting to the point where, okay, if I don't know how to do it, I Google it and, you know.
Well, that's the amazing thing about it today. It's like I said, not working on Avid for a few months, you come back to it and you're like, wait, I know how to do this. But without thinking, you can just go, how do you, blah, blah, blah. And then you got 14 different versions, ways to do it.
Do you remember the manuals that Avid had?
Oh, yeah, book.
Yeah, it was like a Bible. Uh-huh. Well, even bigger than the phone book, too.
Yeah.
It was thick book.
Yeah, if you have any questions, just look it up in the book. And if you still have questions, you can call the 800 number.
Final Cut was the same. I remember getting Final Cut, and it was that was the biggest part of the whole package. It was like giant like set of books.
Yeah, I told Nadav to read it.
Yeah, you made me read the manual when I interned for you.
Yeah.
You're like, here's the book. When you don't have anything to do, start reading.
Yep.
Did you learn something?
I remember I was like, fuck this. I'm just going to be on the internet like while I digitize. And you're like, you can't be on the internet while you digitize. It puts glitches in the code. So there's that manual. You should just really read it.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Yep.
I know all about importing.
Yep.
As far as I got.
Well, we have mutual friends, Harry, mm-hmm. Jurgen. That's actually how we met.
Yeah.
He's the kind of guy that will read in a manual for fun. You know, nice Saturday evening reading, just the Avid manual.
Yeah,
you know.
Just veg out.
Yeah. But there is something to be said about being able to read those. And I mean, I learned a lot doing it, and I don't know. It's valuable. It's valuable information.
Oh, it's definitely valuable because you know a lot more than me.
There you go.
JJ is Nadav's Google.
So
he really is. Sometimes he sends me "Let me Google that for you" links.
That's awesome.
That really devastates my morale.
Pretty funny.
So you're cinematography school. You're learning to use the editing system.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do after you graduated?
I put out the word that I was looking for a job, and a friend of mine was leaving that same production company mm-hmm. that I had done that other work with, and he's like, "We've got a job here, but it's answering phones and, you know, helping out doing some internet research," mm-hmm. and I was like, "Okay," and while I was doing that, so I took that job, and it was, you know, real basic PA job. And while I was doing that, I was also doing some side projects, still doing the camera work and helping produce, you know, shorts and things like that. And then I worked there for 2 years, and they were like a production company that did movies of the week back when they did that for like CBS and NBC. And then the director also had an independent feature that he was doing. And then in working on the feature, I ended up doing a bunch of research on, on old newsreel footage, because we were going to try to do like a Forrest Gump thing where you incorporate the actors into, you know, old news footage, basically. And they were looking into digitally inserting them and all that stuff. And so I ended up doing all this research into all that stuff, National Archives and all that. And so my job became... I was the second assistant editor, so basically my job was to find that stuff, import it into the Avid, and that's how I got most of my knowledge of how to do all that stuff. And then after doing that at that company for a couple of years, another editor came on to do another movie of the week, and I worked with him, and then he got a job on a series, and he asked me if I wanted to go to that series, and then I was on that show for 6 years.
Can you enlighten everyone on what series that is?
It was an old Stephen Bochco show called NYPD Blue. I was on there for 5 or 6 seasons.
Who did you play on that show?
I was Michael Chiklis.
Oh, nice.
Okay, for our listeners who don't know, Brad looks exactly like Michael Chiklis. So.
Thank you.
Man, Michael Chiklis is a badass.
This guy gets all my work. I'm pissed.
Would you recommend, because we've had conversations about being on shows for a long period of time, would you recommend that, or would you recommend something like, you know, you're on it for 3 or 4 years and you try to find something else, or...
There's two sides of that coin, you know, for me at the time, it was a really good place to be because it was my first show. I had worked on other things, but not in the editorial. I had been... on I was like a research PA. I wore lots of different hats on other shows, but this was the first time that I got to focus on one job and really, really focus on it, because it was a 3-3, which is sort of, for those of you out there who don't know what that means.
Thank you, because I was going to ask that.
3-3 means that you've got three editors and three assistant editors. A lot of the shows these days do a 3-2, where the assistant editors are working with all three of the editors and never really getting a chance to learn the edit part or an opportunity to edit. Well, with the 3-3, it allows your assistant editor to learn and to grow as an editor. So it was very sort of like an apprenticeship for me. And I got to work with a couple different editors on that show, and one who I still work with constantly.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. I formed a lot of good, good contacts, a lot of good friendships on that show. And I'm still in touch with a lot of people on that.
Yeah.
From that.
Do 3-3s still exist?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The Scorpion's a 3-3.
You got to fight for it. The producers are, or the, you know, they really have to push for it.
Yeah.
Because the studios don't want to pay that extra person. They don't feel like it's necessary.
Right. Yeah, they're like, oh, we keep on seeing those AEs just sitting on their asses.
Right.
Why is the AE taking one of them out?
Yeah. Why is the AE down on the set? Well, because he's allowed to be on the set.
Yeah.
You know, he's allowed to take a break now and then.
Right.
I used to get in trouble for walking down. Not in trouble, but one of the lead editor, excuse me, on one of my shows used to say, hey, you know, you really can't be hanging out on the set because they're going to ask me why isn't he in the room working? And I'm like, I was doing an output, or I was, you know, somebody else is using the assistant room right
there's
now.
There's so much downtime in post.
And for the time that you're working, the downtime, you need that downtime. Because when you actually start working, it can get intense, especially when you have a deadline or somebody comes in and says, oh, we got to pull 30 seconds out because for whatever reason.
Right.
So, you know, downtime's a good thing.
Well, you could go to set and see what's going on there, or you could be taking a nap somewhere.
Right.
It's like, seems like it could still be productive.
Well, out of sight, out of mind, Andrew.
That's true. All right, so napping is a better option then.
Yeah. In this scenario.
Sunbathing,
Yeah.
Let's see, NYPD Blue. Where did you go after that show?
Oh, you're going to make me think.
Yeah.
You can make it up. We won't know.
I went on to do several different short terms on... we did a bunch of pilots. Me and the guy that I was speaking to about earlier, David Crabtree, he was like the go-to pilot editor for a couple of guys, a couple of producer directors. And so he was constantly working. And he would always say, hey, I want to come do this. And I was like, yes. And then at a certain point on a couple of the different shows, I would do the pilot with him, and then when it went to series, I got to be an editor on the show. I got bumped up. But each time that happened, it was always like a one-season deal.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, I'm right back in the assistant editor pool again.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's just the nature of it, you know, especially when you're doing pilots, because you're not sustaining any sort of, you know, work relationships with people, because...
Right.
You know, you're there for 6 or 8 weeks, and then they're off doing something else, and they've got somebody else on their list that they're calling or that they have to use.
Yeah.
So, but it's been good in the sense where I can reach out when I'm looking for work and send the word out.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was good. So, did several pilots, I should say many pilots, and then I did a couple of independent features that have led to more work, and then building on the resume, and now I'm working full-time as an editor.
Yeah.
So
what was that whole process like of them saying, okay, you're going to go to Spokane, Washington for 6 months and
traveling for a show?
Well, it was interesting because I had, my home base is Sacramento these days. I was in LA for 20 years, started a family in 2010 and moved back up to my hometown, moved in my girlfriend and her son, and then we had our daughter came along, and so I've been based up there for the last 5.5 years at this point. And I was coming down for work down to LA, staying with friends, you know, renting a room here or there whenever there was a job. And then I got full time on another show, Castle, and I ended up getting an apartment like a block from where they shoot at Raleigh Studios in Hollywood on Melrose, off of Melrose. And so I had this apartment there for about 18 months. And at the end of that run, I got the call about going up to Spokane. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I could hold on to this apartment because I'll probably be back in LA working at some point. But then that through the whole process of subleasing it and all that stuff. So I just didn't want to do that. So, but when they called and said, hey, do you have a problem going, you know, up to Spokane? I'm like, I'm already away from my family anyway. So Spokane, LA, what's the difference?
Right.
But it is a major difference, to be honest with you, because LA for me is only, you know, a 5-hour drive from home.
Yeah.
Whereas Spokane is a, you know, I got to fly to Seattle or I got to fly to Portland and then to Sacramento. There's no direct flights. Mm-hmm. So it became a little bit, it was a bit taxing on me. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. But got through it and, you know, surviving it.
Right.
Honestly, it was like that the last month or so because we were just buried. The schedule is such that they shoot 6 days a week. I mean, they shoot six. Oh, wow. They only shoot for 6 days per episode.
Oh.
And then they'll do a pickup day or two, depending on what they need. So it makes the edit schedule very fast.
Right.
And they want things quickly. And the turnaround, once you turn over your cut, it sort of lives in this world of director-producer cut for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets to the studio, then you're still in that, giving those, you know, working on those notes. So... I was telling you the other day, there was a point when I had four open shows. My first episode was nearly locked, and then I had two other ones that were, you know, deep in the director-producer phase, and one that was sitting in daily. I hadn't even seen the dailies, and they had shot all of it, and it sat there for like 4 days before I actually got to work and start cutting on it. And it was pretty intense to try to get all that done in, you know, 5 weeks.
Jeez.
Is that normally 5 weeks is the normal schedule on your show?
No, I'm talking about the last 5 weeks of the show, trying to get those four shows done.
Oh, I see.
But okay. Yeah, no, it was...
Is it a half-hour show or one-hour show?
It's a one-hour.
Shit.
42 minutes. And they're to the frame.
Oh, they are.
And like, we literally are, you know, there's no, oh, if we're over, we really have to fight for it. Or if we're under, we literally have to fight for it. We have to go... We have to cut it back to that 30 seconds so that they can do another commercial or whatever.
Right.
It can't just be 15 seconds under or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's, I turned out, the first cut I turned in of the first episode, we locked it. And then they came back and said, and I, you know, I indicated I was like 8 seconds under and all that stuff. And they came back to me and they're like, well, you can't be under. I'm like, well, what do you mean? They're like, we got to be at time. And I was like, so we had to find ways to put in, you know, more time to put it to that exact 42 minute mark.
Right.
Which was the first time I ever had to do that.
Yeah, yeah. That stock shot could be just a little longer.
Yeah,
that,
exactly.
You know, just get a little bit more breath between lines. A couple frames here, a couple frames there.
It's easier if you're over and you do the James Cameron technique of just cutting out one frame like he did in Terminator 2.
Wait,
did you ever see that?
What's that story?
There's a hilarious story. I found out about this when I was in editing last week on Stitchers. He was like, the editors were like, well, or the studio, somebody was saying, this is running way too long. And he's like, what if we just take every 24 frames and we just cut out one frame from every one of those and it'll shorten it? And the editors were like, you're insane. And he's like, no, just try it. And so they did. And you can look this up on YouTube. There's him talking about it, and then there's an example. I think it was Terminator 2. And it's just the most choppy, awkward, like weird-looking... It just looks like it wasn't shot correctly.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, that didn't work. And so, you know, some poor schmuck had to go back in and put every one of those frames back in.
Undo.
Yeah.
Undo.
It's something to look
up on
YouTube.
And that was on film, I believe.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
No, so. I've heard stories of that where people go through and they'll just take a second or a frame off of each cut on the head and the tail of it.
Yeah.
And they'll do that. And that's, you know, overall, you know, I don't think that's the way to do it. It's like let's find the right chunks to take out and literally fix it. That seems to be the better way.
This just looked like you were watching the movie on and like a first generation CD player that didn't have the G-Shock protection.
Skipping.
So it kept skipping, yeah.
kind of creepy.
Very creepy.
G-Shock Protection.
Look into it. Is that what it was called?
I don't know, but I like
sounds
it.
Right. That sounds right.
It sounds right.
Yeah. Some term someone made up at Sony.
Yeah.
We'll just call it that.
That's Cameron being a revolutionary.
Yeah.
There. Yeah.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah. Do you guys shoot on stages at all, or are you on location the whole time?
Majority of the stuff is shot on location, you know, daylight.
Yeah. And still they do it all in 6 days for the most part?
For the most part, yeah. We do, one of the characters, the DJ Qualls character is in a, like a control room up at the, you know, top of the earth.
Oh.
And they shoot that in an old airplane wing manufacturing company.
DJ Qualls?
Yeah.
He's getting a lot of work.
Best DJ Qualls line ever. It's good.
It's good.
Road trip. Ratio Sands.
Are we talking about the pancakes?
Yep.
That's the French toast.
The French toast that went down his pants?
Yep.
It's good.
Yep. It's really good.
He's also in Man in the Last Castle. You guys been watching
Man in the High Castle?
That's it, Man.
Oh, is he in that?
Mm-hmm. I didn't know. Oh.
Yeah, he was in a couple scenes in that. Huh. Not a main supporting. Yeah.
I liked him in the Jeff Jeffrey show.
Yeah, it was a great show.
Yeah, he was great in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like seeing him in a whole bunch of stuff that I like.
Yeah.
Good for him, man. Yeah. He's getting work.
Yeah.
Who would have thunk that of the road trip crew?
I know.
Right.
He's the one.
That's still.
He's got a good agent.
He's got that endurance.
He's got that look. I don't know what that look is, but
it's that look that no one else got.
Yeah, that's true. But
that's funny.
No, but he's great in the show. I think he's really funny in the show.
Yeah, he's a good distraction from the actual killing of the. Although he, you know, not to spoil and spoiler alert, uh-oh. he does his own. He does some damage on some zombies this season.
Nice
season two.
Aw, shit.
So yeah. But yeah, they shoot that at like they. I walked into the warehouse that they shoot this in, and you look up and it's got, you know, a crane that can lift, you know, 5 tons.
Yeah,
sitting up there because it used to pick up airplane wings.
Oh,
and then in the middle of it is just this box that they built a set of, and it's no bigger than this room really. Maybe it's a little bit bigger than this room, and it's interesting to see that's the soundstage.
Yeah,
right.
I just did hand quotes soundstage. So.
Huh. That's cool.
Yeah, and then everything else is pretty much on location, or you know, they get mansions and the different, you know, these different. We shot one of the episodes. They shot in the old Mason's Lodge, 150-year-old Mason's Lodge, and it's just beautiful inside. And the whole episode was pretty much. They called it a bottle episode. The whole thing takes place in there, except for the rest of the team is out looking for the guy for Murphy who's trapped in this lodge with this guy they called the Collector. That's the episode called The Collector.
See what they did there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Spokane's a cool town.
It is.
At least from what I recall, it would like shut down at about 6 o'clock at night, but maybe that's certain parts and other parts. Well, things are still happening.
That's when all the gangs roll in.
Yeah, yeah. All the
it's like the Warriors.
The Spoke Compton.
Come out to play.
Well, they've got Gonzaga, college there. That if you're in that part of town, it's very obvious that it's a college town in that section,
like a village and stuff like that. And
yeah, and yes, and they all the houses around there are, you know, pretty much rented by college kids, and if you go there on a Friday night, there's like a whole row of houses where it's just like it, you know, you think it's a frat row, but it's really just people getting out and blowing off steam
trying to have a good time.
Yeah.
Do you ever roll over to Idaho and check it out and get some potatoes?
You know, I did.
Chill in Coeur d'Alene for a while.
My family came up for a week right around my daughter's birthday, and we went to Coeur d'Alene, and we stayed at a really nice old. It's an old converted schoolhouse that is now a B&B.
Oh, that's cool.
And then we went to the lake, and we went down to the main strip there, and
yeah,
it's a cool little part of town. There's another college there. I think I want to say Lewis and Clark.
Oh yeah,
is right there. So there's a lot of universities up there that, and Idaho is good, and the potatoes are yummy.
Yeah. And right at the state line, I think it's on the Idaho side, there's a killer Wendy's. Definitely check it out.
Okay.
When you're driving on I-90, it's going to be on the right side.
Is that the best Wendy's?
I don't know. It's Because I used to live in Bozeman, Montana, and like that area was like the halfway point, and I would stop at that Wendy's, and it just did it for me every time.
Was that the halfway point to the airport?
No. It felt like it. Halfway to Seattle.
Oh, okay.
From Bozeman.
Okay.
Neat.
Yeah. Real I would, neat. The Frosty, I don't know if you know about this. You should get what? One. Yeah. It's
do I like
pretty good.
Know about Frosties or something about yeah. specific
Frosties? Is it like, real milk though? Come on.
I don't know. I've seen a guy like pour goop into a machine and then magic comes out of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but that goop is milk, right?
I don't know, man. I'm pretty sure it's not.
At some point I'm sure it was.
Or some derivative
that's,
of.
That's all I got.
Today's yeah. podcast brought to you by Wendy's Frosty.
I wish we could say that.
And Adobe Premiere.
And Adobe Premiere.
Have you ever eaten a Frosty while cutting on Adobe Premiere?
Speaking of horror
stories.
Wasn't
that the greatest thing ever? Oh, do you have a horror story?
I have many.
Oh, cool. Whoa.
It's just a matter of which one. I was telling JJ this one where...
I think that's a good one.
Yeah. It was working at that small production company whose name I don't want to mention because they're still operational.
Universal.
No, yeah, small production company. And it was on that independent feature that I was talking about, and we were
Star Trek
up-resing it to. That's all right.
It's like, stop guessing, Andrew.
We were supposed to up-res it for a festival, and you know they didn't want to do a full online yet, so we did basically an in-Avid online full resed it, and my job was to basically feed the machine with the tapes to import it to the full res. And it was like a 2 to 3 day thing to do this because I had to recreate the timeline, recreate all the effects, all that stuff. And after, I think it was, they were going to pay for the first day and then they were going to have me come back the next week and finish it up. And so the first day I fed in, you know, 80% of it, had the timeline looking good. Everything was looking good. And then I left for the day. Thinking I was coming back to the same machine, and this is when I'm relatively new to this work, and I did not take a backup with me. Didn't back up the project and take it onto a file, which is protocol now. or nowadays we put it on a flash drive, and you know we walk out and we have it safely somewhere, or we up-res it, or we upload it to Dropbox. That sort of thing. Well, we didn't have any of that. It was floppy disks, and nobody said, make sure you back it up. So I come back, whatever, 2 days later to finish up the job, and the project's not there. So the assistant editor, I was the second, the assistant editor brought his project in and loaded it up, and nothing linked up. And then, so we asked the guy, hey, where's the project? Where's the one we had here the other day? And he was like, oh, I didn't know you guys were coming back. I took that off the system. I cleaned the slate on this thing. So all that whole day's worth of work was just lost. And basically I just felt like a complete idiot because I was, you know, looking back, I'm like, well, nobody said, but
right.
You know, yeah.
Always cover your ass.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, no. So I had to go and tell the director producer that, you know, all that money we spent last week having me do all that stuff, well, we lost it. And he was really cool about it. He just looked at me and said, well, you fucked up, huh? And I said, I did. And he looked up and he said, well, you're lucky. You work for a guy that fucks up all the time. And I took that as, don't do it again.
Yeah.
So, and that was pretty much our conversation.
And that, well, that's
that,
good.
I mean, that was 2 or 3 days of, or I mean, a day of regret going, well, crap, I got to go tell the head of the company that I fucked up big time. And, you know, he took it all in stride and just said, eh, don't do it again.
Yeah. Now, did you do it again?
I've never done it again. I always have a backup.
Yeah.
I always hook my, whatever system I'm working on, I always hook it up to Dropbox. And everything gets thrown into Dropbox before I leave.
Oh, that's good.
So it's off campus. It's away from everything.
Right.
And,
right.
And then I'm always do one to the desktop as well.
Mm-hmm.
So double. Yeah.
It's, yep. It's always those like heart attack inducing mistakes where it's like, ooh, I'm never going to do that again.
Right.
Did, yeah. I feel like every time something like that happens, it's instant flop sweat.
Oh, it's totally.
Just, yeah. Right there. And you're like, oh, this is not good.
Yeah.
It's a fight or flight kind of situation. Yeah,
your voice starts getting shaky. You can't hold your hand steady. Your
stomach is squeezed. Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's weird that
people are constantly asking you what's wrong. It's like, are you okay? Did you sleep last night?
It's kind of like when I walked up this morning to you guys. You okay?
Well, it's funny that it has that kind of effect on you. I mean, it's one decision. You know, it's like one thing that messed up.
Well, it's just because we care, you know?
Well, yeah. And I think that's why you have that response. Because if you didn't have that response, you know, you wouldn't. Yeah, you're right. It'd be like, meh, it happened. Whatever.
Well, it's probably like a self-preservation thing. Because when I hear stories when someone else fucks up catastrophically, I'm like, sucks to be them.
Right.
You know? But then, like, when it happens to me, it's like, oh, shit, they're going to trace this back to me.
Yeah.
You know? It's all self-preservation.
Sure. Well, hopefully you should learn from those mistakes.
Oh, I definitely do.
Yeah. That other people do.
Learn how to cover those better. Yeah. Log in under someone else's name. Right. That's always a good one.
Right. Can I share another horror story?
Of course
you can. Share as many as you have.
I was on a very high-profile show, not to be named.
Sure.
On a network that starts with H and ends with O, mm-hmm. and there's a B in between somewhere.
Oh my god!
Oh, the Hobo Network. Nice. Was this Hobo Wars? I love that show.
No, this was Bum Fights.
Bum Fights. That's what it was. Yeah. You got it. Whatever.
I was working with I was assistant editor on the show, and I was working with a new editor. The editor that I actually came to the show with ended up getting fired. But they kept me on the show, which I was grateful for.
Yeah.
And so I was working with a couple of new editors, and we had a communication breakdown when they locked the show. He was already working on his next episode, and he was like, "Hey, the locked version of the show is there," and he pointed me in the direction of where it was. So I went and I grabbed it, locked the show, turned it over. They onlined it, they did the mix, it aired, and then the producer apparently came in and said something to the effect of, "I think that was the wrong version of the show that aired. I think I think we had another pass of notes from that version of the show." So that trickled down to me to check out what happened, and then that's exactly what had happened. There was a version that the editor had started off with in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and then he had made the notes, but there was no indication from him and I ended up grabbing the wrong version.
Oh no.
And locking it and airing it and all that stuff. But you know, the thing that always got me was, well, where was the QC? Where was the editor and the producer and the co-producer QCing what was supposed to air?
Or the mix, like catching it at the mix and going, this is wrong.
Well, it was this type of show where the editors weren't invited to the mix.
Oh, okay.
They were too busy working with, you know, the next episode.
Sure.
And it was interesting because, there was nobody checking to make sure it was the right cut. Yeah. I mean, when I got it back, I checked the VAM against the cut I turned over, and yep, it all lines up.
Right. Of course it does. Yeah.
So, yeah.
What is the VAM?
It's called the VAM is a video assembled master. And when you turn over your cut, when you turn over your locked version of the show, the post house will then make a high-res version of the show. And then they turn that back over to you to QC it against the cut that you turned over.
Mm.
So the VAM, sorry, I'm using terms.
Oh, no.
Video assembled master.
And then you have a CTM, which is a color timed master.
Color timed master.
Yeah, that's when it's all done.
And that's all the color time picture, and then they marry that to the mix, and that's what they turn over to the networks.
And QC is quality control?
I think so.
Right. Just learning everything today.
But it makes sense that when you're going through the VAM, it makes sense that it matches the cut that you gave them.
Right.
But if that's wrong, then,
It was just a poor communication because, like I said, I was working with a new editor, and he was already in buried deep working with the producer at the time. And he was like, "Oh, just grab it's there, blah blah blah."
Yeah.
The rule of thumb that I like to work with is when it's locked, I make a separate bin that says locked picture. Move a copy of it there.
Yeah.
Move that to the top of the project, and then there's no mistake.
Yep.
So
plus sign, everything.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Exclamation points.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the one to use.
Yeah. Use this. I use that a lot. Use this.
Yeah.
So that's another one that won't happen again.
Right. I've come into similar kind of situations where, you know, you have a question about like what cut it is, but when you're new, you're like, oh, I don't want to ask the editor that. I don't want to interrupt their day. Mm-hmm. But if you don't interrupt their day and get the right one, very similar situations can happen.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing to look for, though, for you newbies out there, look for the timestamp. You can usually check the latest cut by what the date and time is, because that's always on somewhere on the timeline or in the file.
Right.
So that was the other thing that I could have verified it by that. So, you know, I take responsibility for the mistake that was made.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how you work as far as your cuts go, but even cutting scenes, I'll put the scene it is, cut, and then the date, mm-hmm. when I'm working on it. And then when, you know, that goes into an act, then I do the same thing with the acts. Like every day that's different, I'll make a duplicate. Mm-hmm. Even in that bin, and just label it mm-hmm. with the day's date.
And, and always the versions. The versions also help.
Yeah.
So
it's like the same thing with writers when we're doing scripts and updating pages and stuff.
Yeah.
It's a different version, different date, and all that.
Yeah.
Don't get confused.
Right.
It helps. It helps.
You got the color coding too going on with the writers, right?
Yep.
Pink, green, blue.
But they don't have those names.
Salmon.
Goldenrod.
Cerulean. Marigold.
Double blue, double pink.
We never use cerulean or marigold in ours.
Yeah, idiot. Right?
White, off-white, eggshell.
My favorite one is goldenrod.
Goldenrod's hilarious.
Yeah.
Buff is my... is.
I think that was my nickname in high school.
Goldenrod or buff?
Both.
Oh, cool. Mine was yellow.
Oh, boy. He went there.
Nobody calls me yellow.
My name is Goldenrod. Yeah.
Sounds like a really wussy superhero.
Or a porn name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just got had by the Goldenrod.
Do you have any other horror stories that you could share or would like to share?
I will share another one from my PA days.
Okay.
Here we go.
This is a first in early call time history. Three horror stories.
Oh, is that right? Well,
which is great.
I'm setting the new standard, folks.
Breaking records.
Try to beat this. I was working as on a sketch comedy show that was trying to be like Saturday Night Live, and it was based on the old Mad magazine. It was mm-hmm. on Mad TV.
I love Mad TV.
And I had been working with the producer.
Were you on it during the Artie Lang days?
Artie Lang.
Fuck.
Yeah, I actually picked Artie Lang up from the airport when he got here.
Oh yeah.
Because I did the pilot, and I was like, I had like seven different hats. I was the producer's assistant. I was the research guy. I was the key PA. I was had all these different things that I had to do. And I had to pick him up, Dave Herman up, Deborah Wilson. I picked them all up at the airport in my crappy 1970s.
When you picked up Artie Lang, we're like, where do you need to go? And he's like, cheeseburgers.
No. He's more of a cocaine type of guy.
I figured that was code for cocaine.
Yeah, I read his autobiography. I got a lot of questions for you after a year.
Okay.
With this horror story.
Well, we were working, and one of our jobs, of course, at the end of the day as PAs were to run scripts to the producers. So we had a fleet of us. There was like five of us. And I would have a stack of scripts, and then I would just hand them out. We would all sit out, have a cigarette before we left. And we were all in the parking lot doing, you know, getting ready to do that. And I was kind of giving the pep talk. You got to get this done, da, da, da. Mm-hmm. And one of the producers, who I had a bit of a run-in earlier in the week, came out to give me, decided to give me some shit in front of my guys. And a little backstory to the run-in that we had. There was only about, there were three producers on the show. Two of them were the writers, and one was the producer, the line producer that I worked for. And there was one bathroom in the office.
That, already a good story.
Right. Except for the two writer producers had bathrooms in their office, but yeah. they're in the hallway for all of the other people. We had shared one bathroom. So I was the nice guy, and I went out and with the PA money, with my petty cash, I bought a spray bottle for that bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this one producer kept taking it in back into his room over a couple of day period. I would have to look for it because I'm like, I'm going to go in there and destroy that room. I want to, you know, paint it when I'm done.
Right.
So he was giving me a bunch of shit for nice. taking this spray bottle, right? And so it was really stupid when I think about it now. And I was just really kind of fed up with it at this point in the day when he came out to give me shit about that in front of my guys. So I laughed about it, and I was walking him over to his car, and we were joking about a couple of things, and we got just far enough away from the guys that I kind of put my arm up on his shoulder, and I was like, you know, I know you're the big shot producer, and I'm just the lonely PA here, but I want you to know, and I looked him right in the eye, I can always kick your ass. And then I gave him a little nudge. And
Jesus
I went back. And I went back.
Threatened a producer?
With physical violence.
I went back to my guys. I thought nothing of it because I was thinking, hey, we're just joking around. Sure, you know, you're giving me shit. I'm giving you shit back.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, boy.
You're about. It was about 2 days later. I get pulled into the producer I'm working for, his office. He sits me down.
This isn't the guy that you made the threat to.
No.
Okay.
No. No. The other guy. He sits me down. He's like, "Hey, come in and have a seat." So apparently, name blanked out. Is not comfortable with you around the office anymore.
I wonder why.
You want to enlighten me at all about what happened? And I don't even think I told him the story. I just said, I could see where he wouldn't be comfortable. And he's like, and so he wants you fired. He wants me to fire you.
Oh, shit.
And I was like, I could see that. And that pretty much ended my career at that show.
Oh, wow.
I was still friends with a couple of the actors and kept in touch over the next that season and everything. But it was good for me because I had taken a break from film school. I had taken a break from school and I had done an internship, which led to work for a year and a half or so. And this was the sort of kick in the pants I needed to go back to school. Right. Which then led to that 2 years working, doing the cinematography work in school and then taking that AVID class. And so it sort of just sort of rebooted my motivation to get that experience in those other things and to be able to say, hey, I can do this. I've already done the production management stuff, worked professionally as a coordinator and all that crap. And it was good because it sort of, I didn't want to go that route. I didn't want to go the production coordinator up to a
AP
and all that crap. It wasn't going to be fulfilling for me. And I'm not one of these guys that wants to sit and look at a budget all the time, you know, and go, oh, well, that's not in our budget to do that. Sorry.
Yeah.
So it was good. It was a good little eye opener.
Yeah.
So
how long were you there for?
How long was I
at Matt TV for?
I did the pilot and then part of the first episode.
Oh, okay. So you were there real short.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we were there real short. But during the Quintus, you know, I got to meet Quincy Jones. I got to meet who was the guy that did the music for that? It was I can't remember his name now. He did the Mad TV song. He came in. I met him. Funny story about that. We shot at the same place that LL Cool J was shooting his show at the time. What was that show that he used to?
Marion.
He was like a nanny or something.
Yeah, he was a nanny.
So
hanging with me.
No, that's hanging with Mr. Cooper.
Right.
No, but anyway,
during that time, okay.
So this was in between seasons.
Sunset Gower,
yeah. Sunset Gower, exactly. And they were in between seasons while we shot the pilot in the same spot.
Oh.
And I was living in Long Beach at the time, and so I would on the late nights after delivering scripts, I'd just go sleep in one of the dressing rooms. Well, we had set up cable in this one room, and that's the one I would sleep in, and the phone would ring at like 3 in the morning, and it would be these ladies looking for Mr. LL. Hi, LL. And I'm like, I'm sorry, LL's not here. And it would happen.
Why would he be at work at 3 in the morning?
Wait a minute. Yeah, really.
So you were sleeping in LL Cool J's dressing room.
Yes, I was.
Sweet.
It wasn't really his, but it was formerly his, right?
Yeah, because if they're calling that number,
right.
I'm sure.
Yeah. You know, the direct line.
Yeah.
And I'm like, who the fuck's calling at 2 a.m? Hi, is LL there?
So he wasn't working there. They weren't there at the... Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We had taken over their office space.
These are ladies of the night.
Ladies of something.
That normally call.
A booty call, perhaps.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah. Let's keep it up.
I'm probably going to get LL in trouble now, aren't I? He's going to come hunt me down.
Yeah, probably not. I'm sure he won't listen to this.
Well, don't worry. I'm sure he knows you could kick his ass.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. I had the optimism in my 20s to be able to do that. I don't know.
I think he did, like, beat the crap out of somebody who broke into his house about 6 months ago.
I think, yeah.
Studio City.
I heard that.
Shit. Yeah. Oh. We were working on a project with him at my old company, and that happened during that time.
Wow.
So don't break into LL Cool J's house.
Don't mess with the LL. You guys know what LL stands for, right?
Lady Lover?
Ladies Love.
Oh.
Really?
Cool J. Are you serious?
Yeah.
What does the J stand for?
J, whatever.
James.
James.
I think his first name's James.
So Ladies
Love Cool James.
That's what the LL stands for?
I had no idea.
Well, there you go.
Huh.
Glad to teach you something.
Yeah. Oh.
That's the most important thing I've learned today.
I feel like if people knew that, they'd ruin his street cred.
Mm. Well, I don't know.
He goes like to the DMV, he has to write "Ladies Love Cool James" on the form.
That's his work name. Come on.
Yeah, I'm sure he's got a driver's license.
Hold on. Does that mean his first name is Lady?
No, ladies. Oh.
Ladies.
Ladies. Even better.
Yeah,
well,
that's true.
Tell us what your real name is. Ladies Love Cool James. But what were you born with? Ladies Love Cool James.
That's my Christian name.
What? Yeah.
That's what your mama named you?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
She loved me, and she was a lady.
It's been a real morale booster my whole life.
I'm learning so much this episode.
Yeah. Do you have another horror story?
I probably do, but
I know of one, but we don't have to talk.
Remind me
about the project that we worked on.
Oh, yeah, that one was that was interesting. That we worked on not that I have to say a low budget documentary, because all documentaries are pretty much low budget. We were working on a documentary at a company that
I'm thinking of a second one too.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Which was the other one?
Well, you should tell that one, because that one's very informative.
Uh huh.
But I'm thinking about the one I came and assisted you on for the independent feature.
Oh,
that was done improperly in the beginning when they were giving you reels.
Oh, that one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's a whole nother. Yeah. Well, that was the editor who didn't want to turn over the proper files.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I took over a feature for an independent director producer team, and I had done her student short film, and so she asked me to hey, would you mind helping the editor? We're behind schedule, and come to find out that this editor had turned over pretty much nothing over to her. And so I turned over three or four scenes, and she ended up asking me to do the whole feature, which I was grateful to do. And so I ended up cutting it with the files that the editor gave us. And then when we went to go do the online after we locked, the files didn't link back to the original files. So we had to bring in a number of people to come to come along and sort of reconform the cut with the new files. And so I had three or four different people working on that.
Yeah.
And
just overcutting.
Yeah, just overcutting the timeline with the
But you don't even have time code for reference, so you have to literally find it.
Yeah. iMatch.
Yeah.
iMatch the whole thing.
I worked on that for about 3 weeks, I think.
Yeah.
What is iMatch?
Basically, you have the cut that Brad has put together, and you have to find that footage within the footage that was shot.
Oh, okay. That sounds terrible. But go on.
So you have to find the setup. You have to find it somewhere.
Do you
at least
get the clip name?
No.
Oh, my God. It's even worse than I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. What happened? What happened originally was when the assistant. I don't know if it was the assistant or the editor, or if they did the same job.
She was doing both of them.
Yeah. She. What happened was she would make the timeline and she would string out all the dailies, and make that a role, which makes sense. I mean, that's the same kind of thing as a DV cam tape for
she
a post house.
Exported the dailies and then. She would cut from that thing she actually,
from the export,
so and, it's all one clip.
Mm-hmm. And now, see what I found out was I found those timelines that she used to export, a few of them. Uh-huh. So I was able to backtrack it in some fashion to match back to the original. So I knew kind of a time code there, and then I'd have to match back to that time. And it was just basically a back and forth.
Oh my
cutting
God!
Cutting in the original. Yeah, it was. It took me a while.
Have you ever come across the woman who made that?
No. I mean, it's water under the bridge.
Run but... screaming in the other direction if you haven't heard her name.
Yeah, she was.
Oh my God! What a. I think she was
mad that she wasn't going to get the opportunity to finish the project, and so she sabotaged us. So, and that's not uncommon.
Yeah.
That's genius.
It's unfortunate.
Well, I think it was just inexperience, obviously.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a willful thing. That sounds I didn't know this causes that.
She could have given us the originals very easily, but somehow she didn't.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we really had to fight to get the actual footage from her. But it eventually got done. It's actually now available on everything, Amazon. It's on Netflix.
You
want to
tell us what the name is, or should we refrain from saying?
Oh, we can say it. Yeah. It's called A Reason. A Reason. It stars Marion Ross from the old Happy Days.
Ooh. Nice.
She plays a mean spinster who's really got a golden heart.
Yep. Spinster.
Yeah. Nice. I should say a dying spinster. That's why she's in a foul mood.
Right.
So it came at the other real nice independent film, and I just got the new script that Dominique Schilling, writer director, just forwarded me her new script, and looking to do that one this year.
Very cool.
So that's fun.
Will it be something that you can cut from Washington or Sacramento, or is it something you have to do here?
Oh, she'll let me work wherever.
Oh, that's good.
Because I was able to cut that one. The reason at my home office in Roseville, California, in the Sacramento area, and then I would deliver her cuts, and she would say, "Great, love it," or "Can we tweak this?" Mm-hmm. And we did that all long distance. We did everything long distance until the lock.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
That's the benefit, I think, of working with her and working with independent projects, is that you can sort of demand that, because they're not paying you shit.
Right.
You know, you get paid a lump sum for, you know, which would normally be about a week's pay. Mm-hmm. For the entire multiple month project. That one took a lot longer.
Yeah.
So in theory, this next one's supposed to have a higher budget, so we'll see
how that good.
Goes. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we have this office, is for, you know, side work that I would want to do. You know, I have a couch, I have a monitor, right. You know, and it's really nice to be able to bring someone over and go,
got a cow skull with a bullet in it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. man.
Yep.
It's fancy.
That's in there.
You know.
Just a reminder, a constant reminder.
That's
just
right.
Just so you know who's boss.
Look at that right there.
There's a hole in that skull. Might be a hole in your skull, too. Keep this up.
Then I get fired.
You want to change what?
Yeah, see, you make threats. Yeah. JJ makes threats. There's threats all around.
I can hit delete. But no, it's nice. It's nice to be able to have that kind of flexibility when you're cutting.
Yeah, and I just up in the Sacramento area, I just opened an office space with a small little studio off to the side. But I'm up in the process of setting up my new work area, my new office. Got the monitors, got the computer all in there. I'm going to spend a couple weeks when I get back. And
did you get a fancy standing desk?
I am looking into that.
Ooh.
One of those floating ones that you can up and down.
They're awesome. Yeah.
They're only $800. I was surprised by it.
Oh, that's not that bad.
No, it's not. I mean, if you're going to spend money on a desk, you know, get one that you can do what you want with it.
Yeah.
And those things, those hydraulic desks that you can either stand up or sit down with, are the new norm that I'm finding.
Yep.
So
I've got one.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I saw one. Somebody had some sort of like Nordotrek, not a Nordotrek, but they had like a walker thing.
Yeah, my old boss has that. He does about 26 miles a week, just standing at his desk on phone calls.
Yeah, that's
like
brilliant.
I'm doing a marathon a week, basically.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Wait, what is it?
It's a treadmill.
It's like that without the whole stand part. It's just the conveyor belt, basically.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But is it as big as that? Does it take up all that room?
His is smaller. The one that my boss had is smaller than that.
Is that also like an $800 purchase?
I don't know.
Yeah, it would be a brilliant, brilliant way to work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Especially with phone calls. I mean, if you're on phone calls, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, a lot of people go outside and walk around anyway.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Why not try to rack up the amount of steps you have in your... you know, pedometer. So
yeah, and it'll keep you from getting degenerative disc disorder.
That's true.
Or sciatica.
Yeah. Yeah. Editors are like prone to that.
Yeah.
It's pretty sedentary lifestyles.
Yes, it is.
Man, a lot of information in this podcast.
Yeah. There.
A lot of horror stories.
Yeah, but that's good though. I mean, like
that's my favorite part of the show.
Well, I think a lot of people. I think the reason why we do it, and obviously the entertainment value of it, but it's also, you know, you learn something from it. Like, oh, I never even thought about...
It's educational.
Why did I do that? You know, like, yeah. So,
and if you can, people, learn from my mistakes.
There you go.
Don't threaten a producer.
Physically.
Physically. Back up your projects and make sure you're locking the right cut. There you go.
Don't be afraid to ask questions.
There you go.
Absolutely. Yeah. Don't be afraid to ask questions and stay hungry.
Nice.
Love it.
And keep your contacts.
Yeah.
Let's see what else.
There's a list.
Shitload of advice I can tell you.
Do you have a Twitter account or anything like that? Do you tweet?
I do not tweet.
If people want to hit you up on social media, should they? Or is it like, don't, I'll threaten you?
You know, they can find me on LinkedIn. They can find me on Facebook. I am mostly available. I'm a little shy from people who I don't know. So, you know, maybe mention that you heard the podcast.
Yeah, or you can reach out to us. Too.
Yeah,
we'll forward it on. Info.
Reach out to these guys.
Yeah, we'll just.
Yeah, they'll give you my phone number.
Do you want to answer this psycho?
No, we have a forwarding thing now. We'll just forward it straight.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
You call our Detroit number and you get
we actually have a phone number where people can leave messages that we can play on the air.
Oh yeah.
Questions and stuff.
So. By way of Detroit.
It's actually Philadelphia.
Okay.
Yeah. 267-225 chat.
Yeah.
Yep.
There it is.
Yeah. And you can also email us at earlycalltime@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
You visit the website at earlycalltime.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can follow JJ on Twitter at
JJGeiger711 and Nadav and Andrew.
Separately.
We don't share together. An account or anything.
No.
But you can follow me at Barry Nadav Show.
Stop holding hands, you guys.
Yeah. From across the room.
Oh, that's not hands we're holding.
Those aren't pillows. I'm at The Real Zuber.
Yep. And terrific. And you're at the what was it?
At Very Nadav Show.
Very Nadav Show, yeah.
And we're at Early Call Time.
And we're at Early Call Time. Obviously. Yeah. So thanks for being on the show. It was a lot of fun, by the way.
It was my pleasure.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me. It was an enjoyable, therapeutic situation for me.
Yeah.
It was fun for us too.
Yeah. And without further ado.
Yeah, listen to the outro.
And that's a wrap. Didn't get your fill at Craft Services and you want more? Check out earlycalltime.com for more podcasts and information pertaining to the ever-growing entertainment industry. And remember to tell your friends about us via Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.